The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
This is an emergency weather bulletin. A tornado has touched down 25 miles southwest of Kansas City at 1:45 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are issuing a tornado warning that will be in effect until 3 p.m. for persons in Jackson and Clay counties. The tornado is moving in a northeasterly direction at 15 miles per hour. Winds have been clocked in excess of 150 miles per hour. Residents are warned to remain indoors and protect themselves.
We interrupt this regularly scheduled program to issue a hurricane alert. Hurricane Beverly, now centered 65 miles southeast of Miami, is building in strength. Winds in excess of 110 miles per hour are expected to strike the coast within 4 to 4.5 hours. Heavy winds and high tides are already pounding the East Florida coast and will increase steadily until the storm arrives. Local residents are...
The National Weather Service reports that severe thunderstorms will hit 6 counties in the tri-state area. This unusually massive storm front is expected to dump 3 to 4 inches of rain within the next few hours. Excessive amounts of hail have already fallen, and flash flooding is expected along the Walnut Creek area and other sections.
We live in a world increasingly aware of and dependent upon the weather. It's not just polite or casual conversation anymore when you say, "What's the weather doing where you are over long distance?" because it could be devastating. Now they tell us there isn't one chance in 10,000 that we can experience in the next decade or so the same kind of mild, favorable climate that has really been the weather for this entire world for the last 50 years or so, in which these developing Western countries have experienced fantastic growth and development, much of it directly linked to our incredible ability to feed ourselves and much of the rest of the world because of the mild climate of the United States and the major food grain growers of the world. But it's a lot more than luck today and more than just cycles or trends. In spite of the tremendous advance of modern technology, it seems that we are more vulnerable today than ever before to the weather. We're so totally dependent upon it. Sensational crashes recently of super sophisticated subsonic jet aircraft with hundreds of people aboard in at least 2 or 3 separate crashes, basically weather related, because of heavy buffeting winds, extreme rain, and very poor visibility, and then being vectored to a nearby airport where the crew was not familiar with the terrain clearance. Sensational crashes taking hundreds of lives. But this property damage, typhoon, hurricane, flood, drought, famine, this type of thing, it seems we're familiar with. We live with every day. Almost every newspaper you pick up, some part of the world has experienced some kind of terrible weather disaster. Still, we have never lived in a time where tens upon billions of lives, tens and hundreds of billions of lives, have been directly dependent upon the weather. The subcontinent of India, for example, could be called a monsoon society. A week too late, a week too early, and the monsoon rains that come in there upon which India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, other countries such as this that have to subsist on food grains, and they either go down economically or they have a good year. There is no such thing as a really bumper harvest there because there's so many people who eat the grain they depend upon. Whole societies then, governments can topple, can be brought down as a result of bad weather. The economic effects of weather are well known upon the entirety of the world. It can affect dramatically the stock market because of harvests in Kansas and the wheat growing areas of the United States. It can affect everything from building and house painting, construction, road building and the like, transportation, shipping and the loading of ships, air travel, to the sale of bathing suits and the success of a parade. It may determine the outcome of everything from horse races, love affairs, to football games. The weather is not something we can afford to take casually anymore because it affects countless decisions every day, not only of a personal level, but on a national and international level. In today's complex, interdependent world, the lack of rain falling on some areas of Argentina, of Canada, the United States, and Australia, the major food grain producers, can affect the entirety of world power politics and the entirety of world economy, as well as international relations between the United States and even the Soviet Union. For example, the Russians purchased millions of tons of wheat in 1972, but now, due to unfavorable weather in the United States grain belt, President Ford has been forced to limit further shipments, even though some are supposed to go out. Such actions, of course, directly affect détente between the United States and the Soviet Union. Even more sobering is the relationship between weather and massive starvation. And that is not just confined to one part of the world, but is around the globe. Millions of people are going to die this year. And they say now that tens of millions are going to be affected in the years just ahead of us. Back several years ago, nearly a decade now, William and Paul Paddock wrote a book that was titled Famine, 1975. America's Decision, Who Will Survive, was the subtitle. And now, members of Congress have said recently that perhaps we should, just as that book prognosticated would come to pass, we should consider seriously writing off some nations, which we cannot save with massive food grain shipments, in favor of saving some that are not completely over the hill and beyond modern technology. And that was the point William and Paul Paddock made in that book so many years ago, that we would come to the place where, almost as if playing God, the United States would have to decide whether to let one nation survive or another nation survive, and simply be forced to write off one or another. And perhaps the most frightening of all is the specter of food being used as a political weapon, just as the Arabs began to use oil as a political weapon. So already, voices inside the United States government have speculated about the possibility of the United States using food grains as a political weapon. If that is done, the potential for warfare might be absolutely staggering. You know, way back, even during the days of the American Revolutionary War, weather played a vital part in the conduct of warfare. It was in January 1777, during the early days of that war, when a fortunate cold snap came to the aid of General Washington in his campaign against the British garrison at Princeton. He was trapped. There had been an unseasonable thaw. It was boggy and muddy. He simply could not move, and it appeared that he was going to be wiped out. Suddenly, on January the 2nd of that year, the wind shifted to the northwest and the roads began to freeze, and by 1 in the morning they were frozen hard. So that night, because of the hardness of the roads, Washington seized the opportunity to go over to the offensive. He slipped out of a trap, marched his army 12 miles to the outskirts of Princeton in the dead of night, caught the British garrison by surprise. The victory not only heartened the colonists, but it increased Washington's stature at home and abroad, and may have had a decisive effect on the entire American cause. Maybe you read the autobiography, or the biography, I think I should say, it wasn't written by himself, of General George Patton. There was quite a story circulated during World War II of the most massive invasion that had ever been mounted to that date, and that was the Allied landings in North Africa. When huge waves were bombarding and splashing on that coast, it would have made landings absolutely impossible and hazardous on the day of their arrival. It was said that Patton caused a chaplain to write a prayer and have that prayer circulated around among the people on the invading ships that were nearing the landing point. And the next day, instead of the prognosticated high waves that would have interfered with the landings, they had dead calm. Another providential weather situation occurred when, during Operation Overlord, that was the Allied invasion of Normandy in 1944, during the Second World War, as you know, it was delayed for one day, if you've read the history of that, the Allied High Command had given its weather experts a list of ideal weather and tide conditions for each of the military operations involved in that invasion plan. After analyzing the weather history of the Normandy coast, the meteorologist picked June, notified the High Command that the tides would be their best sometime between the 5th and the 18th, along those 2 days. They settled on the 5th, and had to delay it one day, with some of the troops already at sea in ships, if you've read the history, submarines off the coast reporting visually on conditions, delayed it for one day at the risk of letting the Germans find out what was afoot. And even then, the weather wasn't what they had hoped for. Drizzly skies, overcast skies, the sea was choppy. Nevertheless, in retrospect, the choice was a great blessing for the Allies, because the Germans doubted we would launch an offensive in such marginal weather and were caught completely off guard. On June 20th, had they waited until the 18th to mount the offensive, the worst storm in 20 years lashed the same Normandy beaches. Weeks later, the Allied weathermen sent Eisenhower a memo with the note on it that told him about all of this, and he said, "Thanks, and thank the gods of war," said Ike, "that we went when we did." Even Eisenhower then seemed to sense there was some force beyond that of humankind that actually controlled the weather. Yet, most people seem to feel that weather is just a series of cycles and trends. It always comes and goes in pretty much predictable patterns. The idea of any supernatural intervention as an answer to prayer, or any supernatural intervention as a result of the lack of prayer, seems to escape many people. But God says in His Word that it is He who is able to shut up the heavens, that it will not rain, or that it is He who can bring rain and destruction right out of the skies over our heads. He says it is He, and not cycles or trends or luck, that brings the rain in due season.
What keeps 2,700,000 monthly subscribers reading the Plain Truth magazine? Listen to these comments taken from actual letters written by readers. A young mother writes, "Today your magazine arrived. I read it from cover to cover with the conclusion that nowhere did I ever learn so much about world affairs in so short a time. I could never repay you for the true value of this magazine." The gentleman comments, "The Plain Truth is put together in an excellent fashion and presents information in an attractive and factual manner." A student says, "Thanks once again for your very fine magazine. I do wish to continue to receive it." A happy teenager confides, "This is the first time in my entire life that I'm getting something free." Many comments like these are received constantly in letters from readers of the Plain Truth magazine. The Plain Truth magazine is available to you free of charge. A broad spectrum of coming articles includes The World's Dwindling Power Sources, Space, Evolution versus Creation, The Rise of Europe, and The Plight of the Old Aged. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your free subscription to the Plain Truth magazine. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
Today, the science of weather forecasting has come of age. The modern weatherman has a whole array of both simple and sophisticated instruments to assist him, and the weather tomorrow can be related to the conditions today. And by using photographs from airplanes and high-resolution pictures from weather satellites orbiting hundreds of miles above the Earth's surface, the United States Weather Bureau is now able to achieve better than 85% accuracy in its 24-hour to 36-hour forecasts. But predicting the weather is not controlling it, a painfully obvious fact to millions of people who have watched helplessly while a storm or drought devastated their lands. And while man has made rain by seeding clouds with substances such as iodide crystals, his conscious efforts to control the weather are largely ineffectual. Even in rainmaking, he must wait for just the right conditions. The weather continues to be one of the most vital yet enigmatic factors in man's environment. The energy, the power, and the magnitude of the forces involved in the weather are absolutely incredible. The thunderstorm is one of the most common displays of raw power. The terrifying boom of thunder is in itself enough to convince you of the stupendous forces at work, not to mention the driving rain and winds and the flash flooding which can occur. But even more spectacular and destructive are the great surges of electricity we call lightning. The awesome discharge of multiple millions of amperes often illumines the entire sky and can cause devastating fires and electrocute hundreds of people every year. Lightning is also responsible for the sudden expansion of giant air masses that produce the shock waves that we call thunder. The largest, most damaging storm known to man is the hurricane. Many storms are relatively short, but a hurricane might last more than a week and cover hundreds of miles. With winds of up to 200 miles an hour, a hurricane is one of the most chaotic of all natural phenomena. Violent winds can uproot trees, splinter frame buildings, sink or severely damage ships, erode beaches and wash away shore installations. Tides may be as much as 15 feet above normal. The combination of heavy rains and high tides produces widespread flooding that can be absolutely catastrophic. Powerful Hurricane Carmen sent its 180-mile-per-hour wind screaming over Louisiana's coast and forced the evacuation of over 100,000 people. 8 to 10 inches of rain caused widespread flooding and property damage. The winds of death later struck with unmitigated fury in Honduras. Hurricane Fifi, as it was called, killed thousands and totally destroyed many crops with floods covering 12,000 square miles. Like the thunderstorm, the hurricane cannot be controlled. When the full fury of a hurricane hits, all man can do is pray. The magnitude and scope of the fantastic and awesome forces at work in our atmosphere completely nullify any attempts at technological control on the part of man. In fact, the energy expended by a hurricane is the equivalent of 500,000 atomic bombs of the Nagasaki size. The tornado is another manifestation of the weather's unbridled power. With whirling winds of up to 400 miles per hour, the tornado is a violent and starkly terrifying phenomenon. The cost in property, not to mention human life, can run in the millions from a single tornado. The destruction is enormous. No storm expends so much energy in so small an amount of space as a tornado. Many people can recall the terrifying twisters that came funneling down from the sky on April 3, 1974. In the little town of Xenia, Ohio, 32 people were killed and almost half of the 7-square-mile town destroyed in a tornado that may have been the largest ever observed on Earth. Many saw it coming, a devastating funnel 0.6 mile wide. Winds in the funnel reached 318 miles an hour, four times the force of a hurricane. It roared as deafeningly as 1,000 trucks on a highway and swirled with what looked like millions of dead birds and other broken artifacts of nature and man swept up from the ground. Traveling at 48 miles an hour, the tornado took only 22 minutes to cut a horrifying 16-mile path from the outskirts of Xenia directly through the main intersection of town and straight up U.S. Highway 42 through nearby Wilberforce. The power of the storm was incredible. It was as if a great crushing machine had rolled across the landscape, knocking over a building here, pulverizing another there, and witlessly hurling their contents throughout the town. Even today, with many of the most severely damaged buildings leveled and the rubble carted away, the pathway of the storm is still clearly visible, marked throughout its length and breadth by bleak, empty lots cratered with debris-filled basements. It only takes a few minutes for a tornado to roar through a town, yet people may feel its effect on their lives, or the loss of lives, for many years. Weathermen can predict when conditions favor the formation of a tornado, and people can often take precautions to save their lives, but nothing man can do will ever stop a tornado on the rampage. Man cannot conquer the weather. We like to think of seeding clouds. We hear of hurricane aircraft flying into the eye of a hurricane, reporting on its winds. We hear of meteorology, of jet streams, of our ability to send up weather balloons, and of our even satellite reporting, which is commonplace on many television stations today, where we can look down upon the earth and actually see the swirling cloud cover, and we can even get prognostications through the weekend and a week in advance, which is really a comparatively new science. We begin to feel a little more comfortable with all the information we're given daily about the weather. But man cannot control, man cannot conquer the weather, and he can't even predict it with any real certainty. Because there is a supernatural component in the weather that goes far beyond present conditions, cycles, or even trends. And the time is going to come when mankind will be forced at some time to acknowledge that fact, that we are dependent upon the Creator who made this earth, who put all humankind upon it, and who made the laws, the forces, and the energies by which it is presently active and by which it operates, and upon which it depends for its very continuance. For several years now, some strange and uncanny things have been happening to the world's weather. Pilots know that. They know that jet streams act in rather freakish and unpredicted ways sometimes. They know that almost never do they see what is called ISA, or a standard air temperature, in areas where they fly. Having to file flight plans, having to check weather at areas of the United States and either Europe or other parts of the world time and time again every year, I know from personal experience that weather has been changing rather dramatically. I know, too, that it's affected even the work that I do. For instance, not very long ago when we were trying to reach a number of people with a personal appearance over in Buffalo, New York, one of the most freaky storms you ever saw dumped a tremendous amount of strangling snow on the downtown part of the city, and even 20 miles away there wasn't a flake falling out of the sky. Boiling up out of the end of the lake there, the moisture mixing with that cold air brought down a strangling snowfall on the city, clogging the streets, bringing traffic to a halt, causing all kinds of weather-related injuries and even death. Something like 6 or 7 people died of heart attacks trying to shovel the sticky stuff off their sidewalks. It hampered police and fire and rescue vehicles. The interstates were clogged with jackknife trucks and automobiles. The whole place was brought to a standstill, and I was forced, much to the chagrin of some of the people who drove hundreds of miles to try to get there, regardless of the weather conditions, to cancel that appearance. So weather does affect us every single day in so many ways. And for several years now, some very uncanny and strange things have been happening in the weather. Droughts, floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, and freakish weather upsets are on the increase, not the decrease. And there's an ominous change taking place in the global pattern of the weather. The whole global wind system is somehow being altered. Temperatures are dropping all over the world, and yet paradoxically, as strange as that may seem, some of the deserts are growing by leaps and bounds, as in the sub-Sahara area. Nature, if we call it that, seems to be on a rampage. A small change, only 1 degree, believe it or not, per year. 1 degree change in temperature per year in some of the food-growing areas of the world could bring about a dramatic change. A small change in global weather conditions could put an intolerable strain on the capacity that we have to feed the expanding millions of people on this earth. The average growing season in Britain, for example, is about 2 weeks shorter than it was before 1950, a very recent time. And similar trends are being discovered all over the world. Scientists and agricultural experts are concerned and worried about it. So the signs of something strange going on in the weather, of climatic upheaval, are all around us, whether you're talking about devastating floods, whether you're talking about the explosive growth of the world's deserts, the sub-Sahara of Africa, one major case in point. And the implications for all this, politically, economically, and with regard to an impending World War III, are staggering. Cooler temperatures begin to shorten the growing season. That affects crop yields and the world's food grain producers, encompassing U.S., Canada, Argentina, and Australia, as you know. Moreover, crop varieties and farming methods based on the good weather of the past 70 years may fail under changed conditions. And this brings about dramatic reversals in usually power politics, agreements and pacts and parleys and treaties between and among nations. It brings about a cooling of détente. It brings about the specter of food wars and a possibility of World War III getting underway simply because massive multiple millions of human beings are starving to death in country after country and quite willing to go to war to prevent it. Dr. Reed Bryson, who is director of the Institute for Environmental Studies at the University of Wisconsin, states, and I quote, "There is a very important climatic change going on right now, and it's not merely something of academic interest. It is something that, if it continues, will affect the whole human occupation of the earth, like a billion people starving. The effects are already showing up in drastic ways. Even as we in the United States and Canada, then, continue to experience increased drought and other catastrophic weather upsets, there are those who know something ominous is happening in worldwide weather changes."
Dr. Crick, you've predicted a drought for the United States for the middle and late 70s. How certain would you say this prediction is, and what areas, if it does turn out to be true, will be affected?
Well, we first projected this on the basis of our long-range forecasts that were prepared in 1969, and we indicated that it would start in the early 70s, you know, with a year or so perhaps of wet weather, but basically a dry era down in Oklahoma and northwest Texas. Well, it started in 70, and by 71 they lost a large part of the wheat crop in Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle, and they were headed in the same direction in 72. Now, we think that the latter half of the 70s will bring more general drought extending from the southwest up encroaching farther north and east into the grain belts of Kansas, the corn areas of Iowa, Illinois, and so forth. We think the thing will peak out so that you'll have a year like, say, 1934 or 1936, around 1978. In fact, the Great Lakes may show deterioration with levels going down and so forth by 1980.
Some people have predicted a major drought in the United States, possibly in the mid or late 70s. Do you agree with this viewpoint?
Well, a prediction of anything with certainty I would not agree with, but I would say that the odds of having drought conditions in the 70s are probably higher than they were in the 60s, without any theory at all, just because we've had very good stretch in the last 15 years in the United States. So one just has to say that we have to get a few bad rolls of the die, as well as the good ones.
So you're saying a worsening condition is likely to...
Is more likely. I think that we've really been fairly lucky in the last 15 years in having better than average weather. But at the same time, there's been a coincidence of some other factors in the world. Population has gone up dramatically. At the same time, recently, We have shortages in fertilizer. So we've had the decades since World War II showing a dramatic increase in food production, on the order of 1% per year increase. Yet population's been increasing worldwide about 2% per year.
Just how adequate are worldwide food reserves?
Well, it's quite an argument about what adequate is. Right now, food reserves are at the lowest level they've really been since World War II. We had hundreds of days world need in reserve during the 60s. And this has dropped steadily down to 66 days in 1972, when we had, I think, the first bad year worldwide in modern times. There was floods in the Midwest and in Pakistan. It was a very severe drought in the Soviet Union, so severe it led to their coming to us. And as you're aware of, everyone's aware of the grain deal made between the United States and Canadian companies and the Soviet Union. India had a three-week delay in the onset of its monsoon rains, which severely curtailed its attempts for self-sufficiency. And there was a continued sixth year in a row of drought in the south of the Sahara. What that means is that they are not able to produce enough food, have grazing land for their cattle, and they've been living virtually on the grace of an international relief effort, which has been buying foodstuffs and transporting it to that part of the world. If simultaneous shortages developed elsewhere, that food wouldn't be available at any price.
The prospect then is mass starvation.
The prospect is mass starvation, unless we have a couple of lucky years and build our reserves back before then.
We Americans take good weather and plenty of food for granted. We think it's owed to us. We think we live in a part of the world where that's just the way of life. That's the way it is. That's the way it happens. That's how it works. We don't seem to realize there is a God and that His Word is literally filled with challenges to people to either observe the laws that produce the blessings and the benefits or warnings about what happens if they don't. There are many statements in the Bible about weather. You ought to write for these booklets on famine, Can We Survive?, and the booklet entitled World Crisis in Agriculture that shows you where to look in the pages of your Bible about coming weather upsets of unparalleled intensity. There's a scripture in the book of Isaiah back in the 5th chapter and about verse 10 that talks about the time in which we're living right now, a prophecy that is coming to pass about our crops in the future. It says, For 10 acres of vineyard shall yield one bath, that's 10 gallons according to an old Hebrew measure, and the seed of an omer shall yield an ephah. An omer was 10 times the bath, and an ephah would be about the same as the bath in dry measure, or about 7 quarts. Now, when you take a look at the fact that a whole acre of grapes would produce only 1 gallon of grape juice at some time in the future, that's drought almost unparalleled. We need to understand that there is a God. And we need to see clearly that the United States of America is not obeying that God. We simply do not keep His laws. Then we simply ought to wonder whether or not there is any connection. I can tell you this. There have been many cases where it has been absolutely proved that people who will repent, who will get on their knees, who will cry out to God for forgiveness, and will pray for rain if they need it, for respite from a storm if they need it, from relief for some kind of an upset weather condition if they need it, and those prayers have been answered, and there are documented cases in history to prove it. You need to wonder whether or not we're under some sort of a strange curse because of the weather today. Write for these booklets, World Crisis in Agriculture and the booklet on famine, Can We Survive? And all you need do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.